The FBI in Peace and War. Another great story based on Frederick L. Collins' copyrighted book, The FBI in Peace and War. Drama, thrills, action. Tonight's transcribed story, Return Trip.
Johnny?
Yes, sir.
I wonder what you think of me.
I think you're just fine.
I mean, picking you up at the roadhouse that way, then asking you to take me for a ride.
Well, what's wrong with it?
Well, they say nice girls don't do things like that.
Well, you're nice enough for me.
You mean that, Johnny?
Mm-hmm. You're okay.
I'm going to tell you something, Johnny. I work at that roadhouse.
So?
Well, what I'm trying to say is it's my job to steer customers to the bar and keep them drinking. I get a percentage.
Well, look, everybody has to make a living.
You're awful nice about it.
You told me the truth. That's more than most people do.
You know something, Johnny?
What?
The minute you walked into that place, I liked you.
Oh, yeah?
Uh-huh. There's something different about you.
Oh, I'm the same as anybody
else.
No,
you're different. I mean, different than most of the men that come in there. You talk different, Jack, different. You keep your hands to yourself. You don't say fresh things.
Hey, now, look, don't get me wrong. I'm no angel.
Well, the old doodle one comes along. Oh, listen to me talking like that, like I was a high school girl or something silly, huh?
You don't feel silly, do you?
Uh-uh. What are we stopping for?
Oh, we need a little gas.
Yes, mister?
Fill it up, huh?
Sure, mister.
It's not filled already, is it?
Well, it's this confounded pump. We've been having trouble with it all day. Something wrong with the switch in the office. I got to keep adjusting it. I'll be with you in a minute. Sheriff, this is Harry Wagoner. Fellow just drove up here in a car. I stalled him. I got him outside waiting. Now, I happened to spot the license plate, and it's on the list of stolen cars you give me. A blue Buick convertible, 1955 model. The license number is K54...
Put that phone down.
Huh?
I knew you were up to something. Now put it down.
Sheriff, he's here in the office. Sheriff...
Shut up.
I saw what happened. You killed him. Why?
Shut up. I said shut up or you'll get the same thing.
In the early fall of 1955, the Bureau had assigned Agent Reynolds and me to investigate a series of interstate auto thefts in the Michigan-Illinois area. The going was difficult for us. We had only a vague description of the thief, and there was no set pattern to his method of operation.
Steve, listen to this. It just came in from the sheriff of Walden County.
The report from Sheriff Gaines led to our first concrete lead in the case.
A gas station operator died on the way to the hospital. Ann Radin, the girl in the stolen car, was found in a ditch 20 miles from the gas station, beaten and hysterical.
Agent Reynolds and I interviewed Ann Radin at the hospital as soon as she was well enough to talk.
I thought he was different than any other man I ever met. What a chump I was. Thought I knew all about men. He taught me things I never knew.
You said he was about 6 feet tall, blue eyes, blonde, even features.
He was good looking, all right. Could he talk smooth?
Now, about the beating he gave you.
He made a mess of me, didn't he?
The doctor said you'd be all right.
Yeah, sure, but how long will it take? I gotta make a living. All I got is my face. It's not much, but it's all I got.
He beat you to keep you quiet.
So I wouldn't talk, he said. But I'm talking all right, aren't I?
And after he got through, he took your money.
Money's bad enough, but he took the ring, too.
Ring?
Well, a long time ago, there was a nice guy, a really nice guy, Johnny. Reminded me of him, I guess. That's why I took to him so fast. Well, this nice guy and I, we were engaged, and he gave me the ring. We were going to get married when he came back from Korea. He never came back.
Miss Radin, we'd like a description of the ring.
It had our initials engraved on the inside.
His initials?
LB.
And the type of stone?
It was a real diamond. No imitation, genuine blue-white. But that's not why I'll miss it, you understand?
Our knowledge of the physical appearance of the auto thief and now killer was more exact, but still of not too much practical use. It seemed apparent that he was short of funds, so we concentrated on locating him through the diamond ring.
So it's another ring, Johnny.
Well, that's a real diamond.
Okay, so what?
Oh, come on, Bert. You can do better than 100.
125, because you're a friend.
Any hawk shop will give me 200.
So why don't you take it to a hawk shop yourself?
Well, I would, only I'm in a hurry. I can't wait till tomorrow morning.
What's the big hurry, Johnny?
Well, I gotta get home.
Family business?
Yeah.
From all you told me, you and that big shot brother of yours are on the outs.
Look, make it 150, will you, Bert?
You're going home because you're in a jam.
All right.
Because you figure that's the best place to hide, that hometown of yours.
All right, if it makes you any happier to know it. Now, what do you say, 150?
125, Johnny. Leave it or take it and you're on your way home.
It's so good having you back home, Johnny.
It's good to be back, Carol.
Your brother must be happy.
Oh, Frank doesn't know yet.
What?
Well, I got off the train and came straight to you. Is that all right?
You know it is. Oh, Frank will be so happy to see you.
We're talking about us now.
Johnny?
Mm-hmm.
Why did you stop writing to me?
Well, you've got an explanation coming, I guess.
When you didn't answer my letters, I thought you wanted to forget.
I did, Carol. I wanted you to forget about me.
Johnny!
I thought it'd be best for you. I wanted to write to you, believe me, the worst way, but I stuck to my guns, and it wasn't easy lying in that army hospital.
Hospital? Frank didn't tell me.
Well, I didn't let him know either. We were on maneuvers in Japan. A shell went off right near where I was standing. They patched me up over there and then shipped me back to the States. The army doctors figured I'd never walk again.
Oh, Johnny, if you'd let me know.
Well, it turned out those army sawbones were all wrong. I'm okay now, as good as ever.
Oh, it must have been terrible for you alone in that hospital.
Look, Carol, I'd rather not talk about it.
Of course. You're back and that's all that counts.
Yeah. Well, same old town, huh? Mm-hmm. Same old one-horse town.
But it's comfortable.
Yeah. That's just what I was thinking when I got off the train. Comfortable and cozy and safe. Well, Frank, I'm back home.
Yes, you're back.
What kind of a reception is that? I didn't expect you to hang out the flags or hire a band.
How long are you staying?
What?
When are you planning to leave, Johnny?
Leave? I just got here, Frank. Well, you make it sound like you want to get rid of me fast.
I do.
Well?
I'm sorry you came back.
Well, isn't that a nice reception? Yeah, that's swell. That's a great way for a brother to talk. My very own flesh and blood brother. 3 years in the army and I come home to hear you talk like that. Sure, that's real swell.
You can stop the act, Johnny. We don't have to kid ourselves. I know all about you.
What do you mean? Know what?
I protected you while Mom was alive. Every time you did something mean and nasty and low, I covered up for you because I didn't want her to be hurt. But that's all over now.
You said you knew something. What?
I found out what happened to you in the army.
Huh?
When you didn't write to me or Carol, I made inquiries. You were in an army prison.
Oh, that. A guardhouse. Well, what's that? A lot of guys get shoved into the guardhouse. Well, you just look at the brass the wrong way and bang, they slap you in. Anyway, you're not a real soldier unless you put a little time in the guardhouse. Ask any GI.
2 years isn't a little time. And you were put there for stealing army equipment and selling...
Oh, they had it all wrong. But try to get a break in a court-martial with all that brass against you. Well, you're guilty before you even open your mouth.
You're lying, and you're wasting your breath and my time. You'll never change, and the faster you leave town, the better.
The better for you. That's what you want to say, isn't it? My clearing out is going to make it better for you.
Look, if it's money you want...
Oh, so now you're trying to buy me off.
Well, maybe I'll let you buy me at my price.
Johnny,
listen. Oh, no, you listen to me. You know, you're not fooling me, Frank. All that big talk about protecting me for Mom's sake, you're not kidding me one bit. Sure, you protected me. You got me out of scrapes. But you did it for your own sake, not for anybody else.
That isn't true, and you know
it. I know one thing, Frank. You wanted to be a big shot in this town. You didn't want anything to spoil your chances. Whatever you did for yourself only.
You're wrong.
Am I? Well, you're Frank Faber, a respected member of the community. Everybody likes Frank. He's a big man at the local bank, a big man in local politics. Why, he's president of the Rotary Club at 25. The youngest one they ever elected. Frank Faber, a man of good reputation. That's what you were protecting all along. Yourself. Your own reputation.
Get out of here.
Hit you where it hurts, didn't I?
Johnny, I want you to leave now.
Uh-uh. No, I'm hanging around. Maybe for just a while.
Johnny.
Maybe for the rest of my life. The old town looks awful good to me right now, Frank. Yep, maybe I'll settle down and become a pillar of the community myself, like my big brother, Frank. Yeah, and maybe I'll get myself a respectable wife, like Carol.
Now, look, she's a nice girl. She doesn't know what you are. I won't let you do that to
her.
Oh,
you won't, huh? What are you going to do, Frank? Tell her about me? What a perfect loss I am? Uh-uh. What, you? You won't tell Carol. You won't tell anybody. Right? So that's it, Frank. I'm staying right here in Appleton, and there's nothing you can do about it. Absolutely nothing.
Back to Return Trip in just a moment.
You know, many great men have attained the highest office in our land, the presidency of the United States. Can you guess the name of this man? He was one of the most successful of our presidents and added more territory to our nation than any other president except Thomas Jefferson. In 1825, he was elected to the first of his 7 terms in Congress. As president, he determined to carry out 4 important measures: a reduction of the tariff, the independent treasury, the settling of the Oregon boundary, and the acquisition of California. All 4 of these measures were successful. If you don't have his name by now, here are 2 more clues. His administration saw the introduction of postage stamps and the establishment of the Naval Academy at Annapolis. Who was he? James K. Polk, 11th President of the United States. His life is part of your American heritage.
And now, Act 2 of tonight's story, Return Trip.
Available facilities of the Bureau and those of local law enforcement agencies were pressed into use in our efforts to trace the diamond ring which the killer had stolen from Ann Radin. Agent Reynolds and I set up field headquarters at the Chicago office. On the 15th of September, just 2 weeks after the murder, we received a promising report from the Detroit police.
The ring was located in a Detroit pawn shop, Steve. Here's a rundown on the man who pawned it.
The man's name was Bert Hauser. It was obvious from the description supplied us that Hauser was not the suspect. However, we requested the local police to keep Hauser under surveillance until we arrived there for questioning. In the meanwhile, of course unknown to us at the time, the murderer was in a nearby state, enjoying the comforts of home.
I'll be by there to pick you up at 8.
Fine, Carol. I'll be waiting. I'll see you later, honey. Hello, Frank. Where are your manners? I said hello.
You're staying here against my wishes. I can't make you leave, but that doesn't mean I have to talk to you.
One big happy family. Oh, by the way, Frank, I'm running short again. I could use some more money.
How much this time?
Look, you're getting off cheap.
How much?
Well, 50 will do. Like you said, Carol's a nice girl, so I've got to take her out in real nice style. 50 will cover it this time.
All All right, Hauser, let's try it once more. You pawned this ring.
Sure, I admit it. I'd be a sucker not to tell the truth to the FBI.
And you got the ring where?
Like I told you, at Larry's Bar and Grill on 12th Street.
From a stranger, you said.
Just like I said, this here guy comes up to me at the bar. He gives me to see a hard luck story of how his wife walked out on him with all he had, except by mistake she left that there ring.
That's what you told us the first time.
Well, why should I change my story when it's the truth?
A stranger.
Never saw him before in my life.
Short and dark.
Dark and short, like I said. Look, he happened to have an honest face. I believed the story. How was I to know the ring was hot?
Who told you it was hot?
Well, I figured it must be. Otherwise, why would the FBI be asking me questions, huh?
You're sticking to that story?
Absolutely. Lying to the FBI is a sucker's game.
Protecting a murderer is even more of a sucker's game, Hauser.
What?
Particularly when the penalty is so steep.
You said murderer?
Makes a difference, huh?
Well, murder, that's something else.
We can forget about that first story now, huh, Hauser?
You won't hold it against me, will you?
Well, let's say you just walked in, sat down, and we're starting from scratch.
Thanks.
His name?
Johnny Faber.
About 6 feet, blonde, blue eyes.
That's Johnny, all right. Now, look, he didn't tell me where he got the ring. He just said he needed some money fast, and I gave him $125 for it.
Why did he need the money fast?
I'm just going to tell you about that. He said he was in some kind of a jam, and he wanted to go home. He said he figured home was the best place for him.
And where's home?
His small town in Ohio, a place called Appleton. He's got a brother there who's a big shot.
Anything else, Hauser?
That's all I know, so help me. Like I said, Johnny was going home so he could play it safe.
Johnny, this is the happiest day of my life.
Perfect, huh?
Oh, I'll never forget it as long as I live.
Hey, you make it sound like our last.
Oh, I didn't mean it that way. It's just that it was almost too good to be true.
Oh, it's true, all right. As true as you and I are getting married next month.
Johnny, did you really like the house?
Whatever you want, Carol, I'm for it 100%.
I love you so much.
Why not? I'm absolutely the best husband material in the county. When are you going to tell your father and mother?
Well, I hinted at it last night.
Okay.
Well, you know how my father feels about you and your brother.
Yeah. Yeah, being Frank Faber's brother will get you anything in this town.
Oh, he's a wonderful man.
Oh, sure. Highly regarded by one and all.
There's nothing to be ashamed of, Johnny, being Frank's brother.
I didn't say it was. I just want to stand on my own 2 feet and be liked because I'm me. Be important because I'm Johnny Faber, not because I'm Frank's brother.
You'll do fine, Johnny. In time, you'll be just as important around here as Frank.
You bet I will. Well, be back to pick you up at 8, right?
Uh-huh. Johnny?
Yeah?
Have you told Frank about us?
I was planning on telling him tonight.
Oh, I hope he's pleased.
No, why shouldn't he be? He thinks you're the nicest girl in Appleton. As a matter of fact, he thinks you're even too nice for me.
Johnny?
Well, home kind of early, aren't you?
I want to talk to you.
Oh, now, don't tell me you're going soft and brotherly.
This is something very important to both of
It'll
us.
It'll keep.
Not
till
this.
After the news I got for you. You can wish me luck, Frank. Carol and I are getting married. And, yes, I expect a nice wedding gift from you. You know, something real nice.
Johnny, you're diseased.
What?
Diseased. Sick.
Me? What are you talking about? I never felt better in my life. I'm getting married. Didn't you hear me? I feel great.
You're sick and incurable.
Now, look.
I'll tell you something. I was ashamed to have the thought going around in my mind, but I couldn't help it, and I had to be honest with myself.
What thought? What are you talking about?
The night you left here for the army, I prayed that you wouldn't come back. Ever. I guess it was a terrible thing for a brother to wish, but that's what I prayed for.
That's too bad you're disappointed. But I'm going to be around here for a long time. I've got big plans. And my big shot brother is going to help them all come true, whether he likes it or not.
I imagined you were capable of anything but that. Murder.
What?
My own brother, a killer.
How do you know? Who told you?
Killing, shooting a man down in cold blood.
How did you find out? Who told you?
They're outside waiting for you.
What?
Agents of the FBI.
FBI?
They've come for you, Johnny. Those men across the street, that's who they are, FBI.
You told them I'd be back.
Yes.
You didn't even try to warn me. You didn't even try to help.
I'm helping you now, Johnny. I told them you'd give yourself up.
Oh, you did, huh?
Without a struggle. If they'd give you a chance, I told them you'd walk out of here and give yourself up.
Well, you couldn't be more wrong. They're not taking me.
Now, Johnny, listen
to me. I'm getting out of this.
Listen, please, just this once. They've arranged to give you 5 minutes to walk out.
Well, you know what they can do with those 5 minutes? Not a chance, huh? Well, I'll show them and you. I'll get out if I have to shoot my way out. I'll make it my
own. The gun isn't in your room anymore.
What?
I have it right here. After I talked to them, I looked in your room and I found this in the closet.
Give me that gun.
No, Johnny. For once in your life, you're doing the right thing.
Give it to me.
Stay where you are.
Frank.
Stop, Johnny. If you come any closer...
Come on, hand it over.
Johnny, please. Please, don't come any nearer.
Come on, come on.
Johnny, please. Now, don't make me fire. Please.
Fire? Fire? You haven't got the guts.
Johnny, don't make me... Please, don't make...
No guts. But...
Frank. Oh, Johnny, I had to. Believe me, for your own good. I had to do it.
Agent Reynolds and I entered the Faber home just a moment after the gunshot. Johnny Faber was rushed to a hospital where he later recovered from the bullet wound. His brother, Frank, was subsequently cleared of a charge of attempted manslaughter. When sufficiently well enough, Johnny Faber was extradited to the state in which he had committed the murder. He was tried, received capital punishment, and finally was escorted down the prison corridor to the green door from which there is no return trip. In tonight's transcribed story, Larry Haynes played the part of Johnny Faber. Eric Dressler was Frank Faber. This radio dramatization for the FBI in Peace and War was written by Ed Adamson. These programs are produced and directed by Betty Mandeville. All names and characters used on the program are fictitious. Any similarity to persons living or dead is purely coincidental. This program is based upon Frederick L. Collins' copyrighted book, The FBI in Peace and War. And the broadcast does not imply endorsement, authorization, or approval by the Federal Bureau of Investigation.
And War has come to you through the worldwide facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.